Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
Hey, happy to announce something really cool that you won't want to miss. We just launched The Lounge. This is a free weekly newsletter tailored just for you, the physician entrepreneur and investor. You're going to stay ahead with the latest news in tech trends, entrepreneurial strategies, alternative investing, and passive income tips. And there's so much more, all designed to further your career and financial goals, delivered straight to your inbox every week. We'll also be spotlighting fellow physician entrepreneurs, sharing success stories, and providing valuable lessons from peers who are navigating the same exciting path that you are. No cost, no hassle, just important insights delivered straight to you every week. To sign up, just go to bootstrapmd.com/the lounge and subscribe today. It's 100% free. Once you enter the lounge, get ready to start shaping your future now. Hey guys, this is Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Welcome to another edition of Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. Super excited about this next interview. From time to time, we love to highlight physicians who are out there in the field, making it on their own, becoming their own boss. And this next person is certainly a no exception. She's a board certified psychiatrist and private practice owner in Alexandria, Virginia. She completed undergrad at University of Virginia, attended medical school at Virginia College of Osteopathic Medicine in Blacksburg. She was commissioned as an Army officer prior to attending medical school, and then went on to complete her residency at Walter Reed in Bethesda, Maryland, where she served as chief resident. She was then stationed at Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield near Savannah, Georgia, where she worked in multiple embedded behavioral health clinics, inpatient settings, and a behavioral health consultant to Army leadership. After leaving the Army, she returned back to Virginia and opened up her own concierge psychiatry and wellness practice. She now has a team of four other providers, a psychiatric PA, two therapists, and an acupuncturist, where they all collaborate to provide premier level care to their patient base. She also operates in the capacity of a medical director and also leverages her knowledge of nutrition and integrative medicine to teach her staff and deliver optimal patient care. I know we're going to learn a lot from her today. I'd like to introduce Dr. Erica Kappas. Dr.
Thank
Kappas,
you so much for having me.
Wonderful. Well, you know, this interview has taken so many twists and turns. I canceled on you. You've canceled on me. Didn't get a recording on it. And just so many different things. And I know that the universe, there's a reason for all of this. So I know this is going to be a great interview and love to share nuggets of information to our audience. So without further ado, let's talk about this because, you know, unfortunately these days, less and less physicians are wanting to strike out on their own, start up their own practice. Maybe you can talk about your beginnings of how you were able to do just that.
Yeah. So thank you so much again for having me. This is great. But I, you know, coming out of the Army, I would say I was sort of in this institutional mindset of having to, you know, work in another big company where I get my paycheck every 2 weeks and get told what to do and have very limited flexibility. So I did do that for a little bit outside of the Army for a couple months. And I knew right away that it was not going to be a good fit for me long term. I even considered leaving medicine altogether or going back to residency in a different field as if that would solve the problem. And then I decided, no, I actually want to stay in my own field and create something that I have been thinking of for a while. So which is a boutique, you know, mental health practice, a beautiful space where people come and have an amazing experience and a really flexibility to do what I want to do with it. And so I reached out to people who had similar practices that I was inspired by. One of them, you know, Dr. Brooke Chalet, who I know you've had on your podcast. And she helped mentor me as well as some other physicians as well who were doing similar things, mentored me how to get started. A lot of it's just getting that first step going because I think I really didn't know even how to start that first step. So one day I opened my doors in one room, and 2 years later, I'm in a bigger office suite with 5 offices, newly renovated with the team of 4 other providers and myself, and doing very well. And I love my work. So it's been a really cool experience.
And I'm curious, was there any like entrepreneurs in your family that maybe not necessarily in medicine, or perhaps in your upbringing, did you do any type of entrepreneurial activities as a teenager or a college student, anything like that?
The answer is no. And I think, you know, I love my parents. They're fantastic and brilliant people, but they, I think, struggled at times with understanding even what I was doing. You know, like, why don't you just get a 9-to-5 or join a different practice or things like that? And so I think for a lot of people who are used to maybe more government jobs or the standard 9-to-5, it's possibly a generational thing as well. It's hard to wrap your mind around starting something from nothing, essentially, and knowing that it's going to take off, but being patient to let it take off. And that's, you know, that's tough for a lot of people, that patience. But no, I didn't come from any kind of background like that. I think, to be honest with you, I think my family was pretty shocked. And I really didn't think I thought I had to wait for the perfect time, as we've talked about before, have more practice in business. And I realized it's really not the case. You just got to get started. Surround yourself with people who also are doing similar things. That's what helped me, reaching out to people who, you know, have blazed that trail already. But once I got into it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. It's such a creative process. I mean, I've had a blast sort of forming this practice, creating it, adding to it, changing things. For me, that's really exciting. I mean, not everyone feels that way, but for me, that's been a really cool experience.
As a doctor, I wasn't used to asking for help, especially when it came to subjects outside of medicine. But then I found physiciancoaches.com. In an instant, I found hundreds of experts to help me in all aspects of life. On areas I was afraid to ask. Dealing with burnout, starting a side gig, money management, even help with my marriage. And the best part? Nearly all experts are physicians themselves. After reading their profile and a quick chat, I knew I found the right mentor for me. At physiciancoaches.com, help from professional colleagues is just a click away.
In what way did the military perhaps shape you in the direction that you're going? And I'm thinking both positively and perhaps even negatively. And the reason why I say this is my father-in-law is a Navy man, been in there 30, 40 years. And actually, when he retired, it actually had, you know, difficulty kind of making that transition to so a civilian work. Anything like that, you know, kind of, you know, alter your thinking or perhaps shaped you in the direction that led you to start up your own practice?
Yeah. So I also struggled with coming out of the military, and I wasn't in there for a career. I did the HPSP scholarship, which for med students, it's the military pays for you to go to medical school. And then you do residency typically with the military. So I did mine at Walter Reed. And then you give 4 years active duty back based on what you trained in. So I did psychiatry, which is a 4-year residency. You give 4 years back active duty. If you were like a 5-year surgery residency, you would do 5 years and that kind of thing. But I came out of it feeling very untethered, even though the military was not something long-term for me, as in I wasn't able to nourish more creative outlets. I am a very creative person. I think I was like an art curator in a different life, maybe, but I wasn't able to explore that as much in the military. So I was eager to get out. But once I got out, it's, oh boy, what do I do now? I'm in this huge sea and I have no idea how to navigate myself. I always felt like I was on the precipice of what I wanted to do, as in open something, do my own thing, but I didn't know how to do that. And we definitely didn't learn that in residency, medical school, or the military. The military is set up to maybe like keep you doing something similar to the military. So a lot of people go work for the VA, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that is just not for me. And so I think I came out of the military feeling a little bit lost and untethered. On the positive side, I did, you know, you build up some resilience being in the Army, in my case, because you don't have a lot of control over your life or your day to day. So I think maybe that resilience was helpful during this time of the transition, but it was a tough transition for me. So I think for anyone coming out of a career in the Army, it's probably, or the military, it's probably an even harder transition. I was able to tether myself finally once I sat down and made a plan of where I want to see myself in a couple of years. But that took a little bit of time to even get to that point as well.
When you decided, that's great to understand the kind of conflict that you had for some time and finally finding something that you could really, stabilize you in the direction you wanted to go. So let's talk about those early years or early times when, you had the decision, you had a practice. Was it, in your head that this is what you envisioned, or, were there people out there, we mentioned Brooke Chalet out there that you kind of modeled after, or did you, think of this, I know what I wanted to do, and now I want to seek out mentors or experts who've already kind of blazed that trail?
Yeah. So I think I had I remember having an idea of what I wanted to do. And then I found Brooke Chalet. She was my sort of a business consultant, I would say, on some level, coached for me for a little bit. And now we've become friends. I consider her a friend of mine. And we support each other from different coasts. But anyways, she, I saw what she was doing. I knew that was something I sort of wanted to do. So I really researched all the practices in I would say, the country that were doing similar things that I wanted to do. And then I just cold called people. I mean, I called a practice in New York City with a woman who, Dr. Namavar, who was doing some interesting things up there. And I just reached out to her coldly. And she was lovely. I mean, she said, let's get together on Zoom. Let's talk. So people will respond if you ask for help or even inquire about what they're doing. So I found some really interesting people. And then I started crystallizing what I saw for myself and doing one little step at a time. And as I gained more confidence in what I was doing and honestly getting more business, I then was like, oh, this is actually where I see myself. You just keep changing course. I see the space being like this. I see the experience being like this. I want to add more services, acupuncture. I want to bring a PA on who helps seeing patients and sees them at different rate as I do. So just sort of making different business decisions. And I've thoroughly enjoyed that piece, just sort of every time you get new information, you pivot and do something different. So I think it's been pretty fun.
Yeah, you highlighted one of my favorite words as an entrepreneurship and really a skill that you need to learn, and that is pivot. And to be able to be flexible to not to be tied down with perhaps, old school thinking or the way that you think it is. And oftentimes, I learned not just from mentors, but even from my own clients and patients who we launch a particular treatment and, nothing really happens. And then, we pivot to something that seems to be more palatable to the audience.
I think the people who work for me, I mean, if you ask them, I mean, I hope to God they say they love working here. I find it a great place to work. I've made the experience really enjoyable. But they, they have ideas too that sometimes I haven't thought up of. But, my mind is full of all kinds of different things. But for example, the PA, Lauren, who works with me, who is just amazing, she'll come to me with marketing ideas. And she has different marketing ideas than I have. And I'm I never thought of that. Let's try that. Let's reach out to this group. So she's really helped market our business in a way that I hadn't even thought of in a prior. And so it's been great to get other points of view. And I'm always open to that, which is one thing I love about business. You can kind of do all kinds of things. You have a lot of freedom to practice and design things the way you want to. And I'll be honest with you, even getting to that mindset was hard coming out of the Army. Cause I was oh wait, I am my own boss. You have to keep reminding yourself of that.
I'm sure the general isn't asking the private for, Terry,
advice.
But it is important. We have our monthly staff meetings and every so often, we'll ask, each one, they may not say it individually. They might email it to me or talk to me privately. And basically the question is, I want you to name, is there something that you're currently doing, or do you feel that there's a different method where it could help your job better? It become more efficient, the way that we room patients, the way that we answer phones, the way we deliver information. Mm-hmm. Because you're not in that, and so I ask everybody, from the medical assistant on up, doesn't really matter. It's all of their information is valuable.
Yep.
And that, they want to work, they want to have a long, hopefully they won't have a long working relationship with you as well. And, you know, oftentimes those questions, you know, those concerns don't get answered by, you know, higher ups. It's unfortunate, but it is very important as an employer to be able to be given that opportunity.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, you know, people want to feel like they're part of something interesting and part of a creative process as well. So I take everyone's, you know, recommendations, you know, very seriously and consider implementing them if I feel like they're in line with the practice.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because one of the things that we had mentioned previously is your ability to assemble a team and some things along the way that could be useful to our audience.
Yeah. So actually another thing coming out of the Army, you don't get to choose your team in the Army. So you look around, that's who you're with, regardless of what you want. So that was, you know, that's what I was used to. So when I opened the practice, it was just me in one room, and I pretty quickly realized I had to bring on extra people. So when I started doing that, it was a challenge for me because I had to really instill this level of trust in them. Like, this will turn into this. By the way, I'm sitting here, I'm pregnant. So obviously at the time, so obviously like the writing is on the wall that I'm going to go out for a little bit. And there was no lease sign for a new space yet. And, you know, there was a lot of things still hanging in the balance. So I had to say, like, please trust me. This is what this will look like eventually. And this will all be, you know, this is what my vision is. And I need you to have that shared vision. And it can be tough for people to really trust like that, because, you know, I think I said it the last time, one of the most addictive things in, I guess, the world in America is a paycheck every 2 weeks. So like the same paycheck every 2 weeks. So when you are coming away from that, it can be very scary. And I totally acknowledge that, because that was my experience as well. So, and I had to say, like, you know, I know that this is how this is going to look, but please trust me. So I had to really find people who had a shared vision. And that took some time, and that, you know, really like sifting through who could stick with me, even if there were times that weren't as busy as others. And so I found that team. They're wonderful. All of my people who work with me are just amazing people. So it's been a great experience, but it did take a little bit of, it was like a trial and error at first.
This podcast is sponsored by Doc2Doc Lending. Are you a physician looking to consolidate your loans, or maybe start a new project like opening up your own clinic? Doc2Doc Lending understands the unique financial challenges you face and is here to support you every step of the way. You can benefit from low interest rates, a lightning fast approval process, and personalized loan options tailored exclusively for physicians. This company was founded by doctors for doctors. Don't let financial limitations hold you back any longer. Visit bootstrapmd.com/doc2doc to unlock your path into financial freedom today. That's bootstrapmd.com/doc2doc, and you can get started right away. Doc2Doc Lending helps empower physicians one loan at a time. So, let me talk about, do you have any hiring tips or hacks that you felt led to you to that perfect, you know, team that you've assembled? Yeah.
I mean, honestly, go with your gut. I think sometimes like we ignore our gut when it comes to like personality difficulties, and you have to like really listen to that intuition. And sometimes, you know, myself and my business partner would interview, and he is extremely logical and a numbers guy, and he's amazing, but we may have had different like intuitions, maybe like I'm, you know, and so you really have to like be on the same page. And if you notice red flags in your gut, you have to go with it. In my opinion, like if you sort of notice things that like aren't sure that's going to work out, the relationship of, you know, contractors or people employed is a very like can be difficult relationship. And it's, you know, you want it if there is any friction there. So it just, I guess my recommendation is go with your gut if you feel like something is off.
Yeah. Well, and one thing too that I probably shared last time with you is, you know, when you're building up your team, don't just rely on yourself to do the interview.
Absolutely.
I've had it where we were interviewing Kay, and I thought the interview went really well. She said everything I wanted to hear. And then we did a quick kind of tour around, you know, the office and meeting some of the staff. And, you know, when the applicant left, I talked to Brie, other PA at the time. And he says, what did you think about her? And she says, I did not like her at all. And I go, what do you mean by that? He says, look how she treated Jeanette. Jeanette's our medical assistant. She did not even acknowledge that person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, obviously there, she probably had some status,
yeah.
you know, ideas of who to talk to. And perhaps the quote underlings aren't the worthy I'm talking to. I said, yo, I did not notice that.
Yeah.
She picked up on it right away. And so having other people getting different perspectives, sometimes they know, you know, on an interview, they know, most people know how to interview and they know what to say. You know, what they're saying behind the scenes is maybe a different story.
Absolutely. And so I actually learned that exact thing a couple, you know, months after I started interviewing. It's like, have multiple people interview. So now I do that. Like I have different, you know, if we were going to bring on someone else, I'd have the PA interview, one of the therapists, but I definitely don't just rely on myself or even my business partner, Cody, even though I trust his judgment. It's just that like sometimes we're so deep in the weeds with things. So it's good to have that outsider.
Yeah. So let's talk about you got the team, you got the Avengers assembled. So how do you work in a cohesive unit? What are some of the strategies you use?
Yeah. So like I said, you know, I think, you know, just really, you know, taking everyone's viewpoint seriously. I mean, I hope that they would say they love working with me. I give a lot of flexibility with scheduling when people see patients, when people don't see patients, as long as they're meeting the standard that I see for this practice, which they know, because that was like outlined to them when they came on board. And that's one of the reasons they like the practice. As long as that's going on, like I don't micromanage. I try not to micromanage. I do check on the clinical work at times, and I'm always around for, especially with the physician's assistant, with any clinical questions. And I'm always available for anything, whether it's, you know, concerns, things that need to be adjusted, clinical questions. So I think that's a huge thing as well, being available to people like quickly and not just like, oh, I'll call you back tomorrow. Like I'm always available for people, whether they just want to talk or whether they want to talk about business related matters or patient related matters. So I think that's been really helpful. And I think that if you would ask any of my staff, they would say that, you know, I'm always around for anything that they need. I also have an expectation of a standard, and like, I don't even have to voice that. Like they know, because I model that standard myself.
That's great. I mean, you know, they need somebody to model after.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had situations where I deal with clients, you know, business clients. And, you know, I there's one doctor who said, you know what, they're not making PAs like they used to, you know, in terms of work ethic and everything like that. But then I noticed a pattern. He went through a PA like almost every month. And then if it's not the PA, it's you. And
you.
Yeah, it's the king of micromanaging. To some extent, obviously, you know, what I like to start when I'm hiring, I usually have them on a trial basis, you sure. know, for 3 months or something like that, whether you like us and we like you. Mm-hmm. And then once you're able to do it, it really is important. You know, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, it ultimately falls on you. It's not necessarily yep. employee. It's, you know, was it the way that I gave, or wasn't that clear? Or did I not give directions? And oftentimes, you know, not to say everything is your way, but a lot of it falls on the employer or the boss. You know, at the end, you want them to be proactive. You know, you got to get away. There's no way you can run a practice when you're micromanaging everything. Go insane.
I don't have enough time in the day to do that.
Yeah. And you have to give them role, and you have to give them responsibility. And sure, there'll be times where you want to check up, but, you know, and make sure that everything is there, but we have it so each person is accountable, you know, accountable on a regular basis, and they have to report you know, what was done at the end of the week or end of the quarter. What have we done to get accomplished?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for the PA, obviously, you know, from the clinical side of the house, I supervise her. And so, you know, I really was watching, you know, to make sure her clinical acumen was, you know, up to snuff. Obviously, like personality is great, but you also want someone to be technically very good at their craft. So that was and she's, you know, she's amazing. But that, you know, obviously you have to check on that when you first hire someone, because that does fall under your license. So
100%, 100% for sure. So let's talk about, again, I like talking about those early days. Sometimes they can be pretty painful, but I think a lot of lessons can be learned from those. You know, we have a number of people listening. They're looking to start up their clinics. You know, let's just talk about kind of the things that we often have to talk about, like expenses and money. I think last time you told me you weren't inherited some big fortune to start up your own. What were some ways that perhaps, you know, did you bootstrap your way? Did you take loans? Some things. And what should we be spending money on?
So I didn't come from wealth or anything like that, but I also did not take any loans out. I started small and didn't spend a lot of money on overhead at the beginning. So I live in the DC area. Rent is extremely expensive around here, you know, so it was a little intimidating, but I started out small, one very cool room essentially that I decorated in a really funky way. So people were like, oh, this is kind of neat. They thought it was very intentional, even though I'm like, this is all I could get right now. But that was okay. And then I just, because I was paying so little on rent to start out with, I was able to save a lot of money. And then once we were ready to move into a bigger space, we were able to afford that, as well as completely furnish the space, which obviously was a massive expense. But I had saved, I didn't let my like lifestyle flex based on the money I was making. I think a lot of people do that. They start making more money. Suddenly they're, you know, driving a $100,000 car and buying Chanel shoes. Like, I wasn't doing all that. I recognized that there was something I was, you know, banking for the future. Happens, Cody, my business partner, is like a money, is a numbers guy. So he also would keep me in check with that because he runs, he you know, was tracking the books and everything. But I think, you know, you want to like make sure you know what your long-term vision is, because we all are have a tendency to want to flex our lifestyle based on making more money. And it's really, that's where you get in trouble. You can't save like that. I did not take any loans. I think that, you know, some of my friends did, and I think that's reasonable. But just for me, I didn't need it because I wasn't bringing in any huge machines at the time. I think for some places like aesthetic practices, you do have to bring in lasers and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, great. But you do probably need loans for these types of things. But for me, I was, you know, psychiatry practice the way I started, I didn't need all that.
Yeah. And I tell them, you know, because as you know, I run med spas. I didn't get my first laser until 8 years in practice.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't that necessarily have to be the first thing that you want to do? So
exactly.
You spent money, not too much on the furniture and the decorations.
No, I did, but this was after I had money.
So what was your first, besides your business partner, what was your first hire?
First hire was Dr. Farrell. She's a therapist and a couples therapist and a, you know, an individual therapist. So she would take all my therapy patients, and we started marketing couples therapy because insurance doesn't cover couples therapy anyway. So it actually fell perfectly in line with the practice. And then we brought on an acupuncturist, which I actually did have to invest some into, like the very nice bed that we got and all of the acupuncture supplies. But that was just a, you know, that was, you know, quite a bit of, I would say, expense, but that was, you know, because I had saved money, it ended up being totally fine. And then when I knew I was going out on maternity leave, I knew I needed to bring another medical provider in. So I brought in the PA and then another therapist as well.
What about ancillary stuff, your front desk or any of those?
Yeah. So I actually didn't spend a lot of money on that. I did most of that. Cody and I would basically run the calls ourselves.
Oh, wow.
So at the beginning, we didn't spend a lot of, I mean, the startup costs for me, like Brooke, you know, Dr. Chalet, was her advice was like, just get going with it. You know, obviously do the basics and just get going with it. And I think that if I had waited around to have everything perfect, I never would have gotten going, you know, gotten off the ground. It would have been like, wait for the perfect, you know, time to do this, or the perfect website. If you wait around for that, it just, time goes by so fast, you never get to it.
Yeah. There's never a perfect time.
No.
Oh, but if I make X amount, you know, now I can afford this. And sometimes you just need to do it.
Just need to do it. And, you know, eventually, you know, like I told you, like next week, our new version of our website's coming out. It's going to be beautiful. But obviously, like, that took me some time to get the bandwidth to, you know, redo that once I had the new space set up. So it's not as important initially. I mean, yes, you want it for marketing. You want it in sort of nice for marketing. But if you really want to refine it, you have time to do that once you sort of are in the business.
So what started bringing in the patients for you? Did you do your own ground, you know, game marketing?
I was getting coffee and lunch with every therapist, other physicians in the area every single week, about twice a week. I was meeting face to face with internal medicine doctors, family practice doctors, concierge physicians in the area, therapists, like women's health specialists. Cody was bringing donuts to like concierge OBGYN practices just so we got our name out there. We also sent out a bunch of postcards with our name on it saying we were open, we were taking new patients. So I did, you know, we did invest some money into marketing. We started running some Google ads, not a ton, but just enough so you could find us in the area. And basically it was word of mouth. It was my foot game. I was in all of these events. I mean, it was exhausting.
And what compelled them to sit down with you? Was it the donuts? Was it your sparkling?
I think they were actually surprised. They were like, wow, we don't usually have doctors reaching out to us. People said that so many times. We don't usually have doctors like reaching out to us like this. And I was like, oh, okay. And so they were like happily like, wow. And then they'd start referring patients to me because we'd already had this conversation and they felt like, you know, we could collaborate on patients. I also, you know, became acquaintances with a concierge internal medicine guy in Old Town Alexandria. He and I sat for coffee. We, you know, kind of talked about the way we do business and he started sending me over patients and vice versa. So I wanted to connect with like-minded people.
And of all of those different things that you did, which you think had the most impact in terms of marketing or bringing in?
Honestly, sitting down with people. I mean, for me in this area, this area is a lot of like getting your name out and reputation. This is the DC area. And so I think it helped a lot because I'd suddenly get referrals like, oh, my therapist knew this other doctor who mentioned your name and they, you know, sent us over here. So it was a lot of work at the beginning. I did enjoy it because it was something different than just my old 9-to-5 job of seeing patients all day. So I was like getting dressed up, going out for coffee. I mean, you know, it was kind of fun. And you know, you were doing it for like essentially your child, your business that you were forming. So I felt really like excited about it. And so, you know, that went a long way. I went to practices to visit. I gave a couple talks at a couple local practices.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And, you know, it's funny in this era of internet and social media, and, you know, I have docs saying, do I need a dance on TikTok? You know, at the end of the day,
no.
What I've always felt has the biggest impact is what my partner calls, you know, you have to have a great ground game. You have to help. And like you said, you know, you're not too big to actually sit down and have, you know, coffee with your providers. And, you know, if you have that mindset, I think you're really kind of missing the boat. As you said, it was kind of a breath of fresh air for them sitting down and getting to really know them. And
yeah, they were like literally the amount of times I heard, we've literally never had a doctor reach out to us like this.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And I'd have like, at the time, you know, some people were still wanting to do Zoom. It was 2022. So, or I think the early 2022. So I'd do Zoom kind of coffee with other providers. A couple of practices wanted to do like Zoom calls with me, with all the members of their practice, just so they kind of knew I was out there. And I became friends with some of the other providers. I mean, I got to know people in the area myself. And yeah, it's funny. I don't even have... I keep saying I need to get an Instagram page for the practice because I know people do. I don't have any social media for this practice. And somehow I feel like it makes it a little more mysterious and cool. But I also know that like social media is a thing now that I may have to get on board with. But I've done all of this with no social media.
Yeah, it's one thing. But, you know, I tell them and I come from an online background, marketing background.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be spending all that money on Google and Facebook. If you haven't done the ground game, so essential.
Yeah, it's and honestly, I got that idea from Dr. Shule. I mean, she's done an amazing job of connecting herself to therapists and physicians in her area, and she's, you know, well known in that area, and that's how she did it. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting, and I modeled. I kind of knew that was what I figured. This is a similar area, urban area. People know each other here, and that worked for me. So I very much value that piece of advice she gave me.
Well, we're coming to the end of the interview. This has been amazing. Lots of great information and nuggets for someone either considering opening up their own practice or perhaps you're out of practice right now and maybe it's a little bit stagnant. Some great ideas to kind of accelerate the process.
Yeah.
So any last minute thoughts or advice you'd give to those perhaps early practice owners out there?
Yeah, I mean, just keep at it and let it grow organically and sort of, you know, don't rush things, be patient. organic growth was really big for me rather than cancerous growth. Also, for people who are stuck in jobs they don't like and they want to open a business, just do it. It's the best thing ever. I love my job. I literally love what I do. Sometimes I'm like, is this seriously my job? Like, it's so awesome. And not, like I said last time, not many doctors will say that about what they're doing. So I feel lucky. I just am having a really good time.
If somebody wanted to reach out to you and perhaps pick your brain as someone else did for you a few years ago.
Oh my gosh, I'd love it.
Where would be the best place for them to reach out?
Yeah, email me, Dr. Kappa said district-wellness.com. I would love to share pieces of knowledge or help people out. So feel free to reach out.
All right. Well, wonderful, Dr. Kappas. Again, her practice is called District Psychiatry and Wellness. You can go out, check out her website. We'll leave that in the show notes. Thank you for your time today. It's been illuminating.
It's good to talk to you again. It was even better the second time around.
Thank you again. Thank you for listening. As always, you're going to have ups and downs in your business. It's always important to seek out mentors, find out people who are maybe doing what you want to be doing, seek them out, get their advice, and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now, let's get to work.